Pickaxe.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Triforce Podcast. This week it's an archive show because Sips is busy doing babysitting or something like that, and P-Flax is taking his car to the mechanic or something like that. I am here on my own, so this is actually an archive podcast. I know you guys love these. It's me and Sips chatting on Team Double Dragon for the next hour. I hope you enjoy it and have a good time.
We're back.
So I read an internet article that said the average keyboard has like 10 times as much like fecal matter on it than the average toilet seat.
That is really
because
gross.
No one ever cleans their keyboard.
No.
And they don't wash their hands, I guess.
So, do you ever get that thing on your keyboard where you get like a horseshoe shape of like dried up Pringles dust? Sort of like
what the fuck congealed. Are you talking about?
Well, I'm just saying, I mean, sometimes I don't clean my keyboard either, and maybe sometimes I don't wipe my hands after I eat, so you get
what kind of horseshoe shape though? What
are you talking about? You know, like your finger on the key, it's like, you know, when you put your finger on the key, it's like the outside of like the tip of your finger, so it like sort of makes a
what, around the up arrow?
Yeah, sure, around the up arrow, yeah. You know what I'm saying?
What the fuck?
No, you never had that?
Fuck, no.
I'm a filthy asshole. Well, to be fair, my keyboard is pretty clean right now. I've like started cleaning it more, but at one point, at like a really low point in my life, I'm pretty sure that there was like a congealed horseshoe of like Pringles and Cheetos dust on possibly the 2 key, which was my flash heel key.
It was yesterday.
Back in the day. Yeah, no, it was yesterday for sure.
Yeah. Oh my God. Just so everyone knows, I'm not as gross. We are not as gross as we make out. In fact, we're pretty... No, I don't want to say we are any kind of OCD, because we're not, right?
Man, I'm pretty fucking gross.
That's an actual thing that a lot of people are like, oh, I'm all OCD about this, when they're clearly not.
No, I mean, it is seriously debilitating in your life. Yeah, being anal is not having OCD. OCD will cripple aspects of your life and potentially ruin parts of your life because it's a compulsive disorder.
And reading a Reddit article that says keyboards have shit on them more than your toilet seat, making you want to clean your keyboard once, that doesn't make you OCD, okay? That's fairly normal. So I do try and clean stuff that I think is a bit gross. I'm one of these people who won't like touch the handle of the toilet stools and stuff.
But do you just use like a bit of... Do you carry like wipes with you for that, or do you just use toilet paper? Because arguably there's a lot of shit on the thing that holds the toilet paper in public toilets. And not only that, maybe on the toilet paper itself. Like, I don't know how many people have been in there waving their dick and their ass around.
A couple of sheets of loo roll and use that to like lock the door or like unlock.
Yeah,
see what I mean?
I think you should consider actually carrying around some antibacterial wipes.
That sounds like a good idea.
Because
you are a dad, right? So you now have to have a handkerchief in your pocket in case a child gets a nosebleed or something gets spilled and you have to wipe it up.
Handkerchiefs
are so useful. My dad would save the day.
We have a suitcase that we take everywhere with us that has every possible thing a child could ever need at any given...
What are you talking about?
Because that's what you do when you have kids. It's
what, like a fucking defibrillator? What's in there?
It's not a suitcase. It's like a big fucking bag that has like diapers in it, wipes, bottles, like fucking soothers, like everything. It has everything in it. So no, I'm not going to put a fucking handkerchief in my pocket. I'm just going to put it in the bag with all the other shit that we carry around everywhere.
Tough shit. You're going to have to.
No,
you're
going
to have to at some point. It's going to tick over.
I'm not going to do it. And you can't
your
make
age
it either.
Is going to tick over. And you're going to think, do you know what I need today? A handkerchief.
Fuck.
And then, do you know what? I'm going to buy you a pack of handkerchiefs when I come over next. And you're going to say, actually, Lewis, goddamn, do you know what? I've been using that handkerchief you gave me every day. It was so useful.
Yeah.
You'll do telling
me. You going to get my initials embroidered on that as well?
Yeah, what are they?
I'm not telling you. I don't want that shit.
Okay,
I'm
they're
never
not too bad.
Use that.
I didn't want to. If I couldn't get them for Frank Underwood, for example.
Frank Underwood, yeah. Yeah, get me a handkerchief with Frank Underwood's initials embroidered into it. That would be nice. That would be really good. And as a joke, when you come over, you're like, all right, come on, Sips, let's see the handkerchief. And I pull it out, and there's just a big shit stain on it. There you go. I've wiped
and that's what you got when you wiped your keyboard down.
I wiped my keyboard, and I wiped a big log of shit off my keyboard. Anyway,
listen, when
we're
going to
come back next time, Lewis, and we're going to talk about something a little bit nicer than congealed Cheeto residue on my keyboard and shit and wiping my ass with a handkerchief, okay?
Is multi-purpose. It is like the wipes before there were wipes. You know, my dad always had a handkerchief. It was always there for emergencies, you know? There was always some emergency. You could put it tight over your head like a hat, you know? You could, you know, use it for all sorts of things that I can't think of now, but he found ways. It's a dad handkerchief thing. We're not going to talk about it anymore. Well, we try and bring you these cultured discussions here on Team Dibble Dringles, whatever we are. But
Team Donnie Darko.
So we tried to bring you some cultured discussion about books, and good books, bad books, reading books. I advise you check out some books. They're good. They're good for you.
Yeah.
Made books of paper. Are good for you. Get some paper ones. They're fun.
Get one on your Kindle.
But we ended up talking about poop and handkerchiefs.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Amongst but there's a lot of things. Poop in your life at the moment, Sips, because of the baby.
Well, it's true, actually. There is a lot of poop in my life. Not like bad poop. It's like, you know, baby poop isn't that bad, actually. It's like pretty buttery and like doesn't really smell like poop. It gets everywhere, but
I guess there's not too much. There's a lot of it. Is it like sand? It just gets everywhere? Or is it?
No, it's like when you have a diaper, sometimes that diaper just isn't enough to hold the torrent of matter that escapes one's butt. So you imagine, like, how can I best explain this? Imagine you yourself are wearing a diaper.
I don't really want to hear this, but carry on. Fine. Okay, you've taken the time to delicately compose this. I'll listen to you. I'll hear you
okay,
out.
Okay, fine. So there you are wearing a diaper, okay? Now let's imagine that this diaper is made out of rubber, see-through rubber. It's very tight-fitting, okay? You can barely, like, squeeze it on to yourself,
This is a normal weekend for me. Carry on.
Yeah. And you just do, like, the biggest diarrhea you've ever done in your life while those are on, okay?
I mean,
there's not a lot of wiggle room.
Straight through the rubber.
No. Okay, so this is the thing. No hole is being punched anywhere, okay?
Okay.
So, and this thing is really tight, right? Like, there's not a lot of, like, wiggle room for you.
So is it, like, blowing up like a balloon? Like swelling up and...
No, because, I mean,
vibrating,
it's, your
like
life isn't a cartoon, contrary to popular belief. So it's not blowing up like a balloon, no. What's happening is the shit just shoots upwards out the back of your rubber underpants, all up your back and onto your shirt and everything else as well. That's how babies shit.
Okay. Right.
And that's why nobody likes it when a baby takes a shit, especially when you're out in public. And babies and children just have this like sense. They have like this sixth sense for doing stuff at the most inconvenient times, okay? Like you're at a funeral. It's at like the really, really sad part where like, the, you know, they start playing like the Barry Manilow. They're like, oh, Sheila loved Manilow. And then, you know, it's not unusual. You know, it starts playing and everybody's fucking crying and everything. And you're just sitting there going like, shit, do not shit your pants right now. No. And you look over and your baby is making that face that you know that the shit is coming out. And you're just like, oh, no. No, not during Manilow.
That's what you make.
Not
the noise.
At Sheila's
that's the
funeral.
Same noise you make when you take a shit as well, strangely.
Well, yeah, that, I know, but that's a relief. In this case, not much of a relief, actually. If anything, you're just like... But on the other hand, if you didn't really like Sheila that much, or you're not a fan of Barry Manilow being blared across like a church, because it's like modern day now, you know? Like back in the day... Used to go to like a church service for a funeral and they'd play like hymns and stuff. No, now they play like El Devo and like, you know, like popular songs because people like those songs nowadays, like when they pass away. So it's like, it's kind of weird. It's kind of awkward sometimes. So maybe you don't like the artist that they're playing across the church and your baby's done shit in their pants. Kind of like a free pass to get out of there, you know?
What did people do before... Like wet wipes and nappies.
Oh, God. I think they used like reusable diapers, like cloth ones.
Oh, and they boiled them up.
Yeah, they boiled them up. And I mean, if you're like really like ecocentric or whatever, I think people still do that.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I like the environment as much as the next guy, but fuck having like a hamper filled with like shitty cloth. In my house. Like, no fucking way. You gotta draw the line somewhere. Jesus.
I like the environment as much as the next guy. But that environment isn't shitting all in my house.
That's right. I like the environment as long as it's not shitting in my house. Pretty much.
That's a good way to think about
anyway,
it. Anyway. Do you have...
We have to talk about books now, Lewis. We were going to talk about books, right?
No, do you know what we can talk about? You know, you talked a little bit about a funeral there. I don't know. I'm not a dad, okay? I'm not.
Do you wish you were a dad sometimes? Sometimes you listen to my tales of being a dad and you think, man, you know, being a dad would be pretty fun.
And it cements my desire not to be a dad. Yeah.
No. It's fun to just like see other people's kids once or twice a year. And then you're like, yeah, you know, that's enough for me.
I'm glad I don't have to deal with this.
I'm glad I never have to yell at my own children.
I'm just still a bit sort of surprised by the whole bath of shit thing, really. But we'll go away from that. It's just, I guess I would just have kind of...
It's just like having
spray,
your own tub girl.
A water spray. And I just like, you know, like one of those things that you spray flowers with. Like
yeah,
a squirty.
Like, yeah, like a little like...
yeah, I just
things.
Spray that all over. I just like...
Like you do to a dog when it's bad? Like, get out of here. Stop shitting. Stop shitting all the time. You can't do that to kids. Because like somebody will come over and take your kids away if you do that.
Who?
Well, like the authorita.
How are they going to know?
Well, because somebody always tells them.
But who?
I don't know.
Okay, they've got this.
I'm still trying to figure it out.
Government spies. Anyway, I'm not suggesting you spray your children in the face to stop them pooping. I was suggesting you used it as a kind of clean-off.
That.
Like, you know, you hold them up, like, and your wife holds them up, and you just, like, it's almost like a shower for a baby, right?
You know what you really need?
What?
You need the scene from 12 Monkeys where those guys are power washing Bruce Willis. That's what you need. That's the ideal, I think.
That'll get them really clean.
That's the safest way to clean your kids, I think. A little bit controversial at the same time. And I think probably you could get taken to court. Today we have a man and a woman accused of power washing their children. Industrial grade power washing.
Babies are very fragile in many ways, aren't they? But also they're sort of quite... they're kind of fairly... Well, they're sort of supposed to be fairly durable. Like, babies do get dropped. I'm sure I was dropped a few times as a baby. And I don't know whether you've dropped your children from...
I'm pretty sure never, actually. Okay. I mean, you actually go out of your way to make sure you don't drop them. Even though people sort of say, like, you know, they're like Jell-O, okay. It's okay. That's typical of a baby dropper to say that, to try to justify their past dropping infringements. No, I've never dropped a child.
Well, neither have I.
I don't intend on ever dropping a child.
Okay.
Because... that's pretty bad to do, actually.
I'm glad we're getting this stuff out here. The other thing I read, which I'm not sure is true, okay, would be, say, for example, you bring your kids. Now, I don't know how old this works on, but I think maybe when they're younger, it'll work okay. Is if you go to, for example, a funeral, and everyone is all, like, mega sad and, like, bursting into tears and, like,
and
really upset.
Fucking, you know, straight away... you know what's coming next. That fucking Sheila loved Manilow so much.
Yeah.
Now we gotta bust some out.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, God. Oh. Man, I feel so jaded, but like, I don't know. Like, I feel like funerals are too tacky nowadays.
For
like,
a long time, I thought Barry Manilow was black.
Wow. Man, I mean, he virtually is now. He's so tanned, like, it's crazy. But
So you're at a funeral, right? And imagine it was Barry Manilow's funeral, and so instead everyone was having a great time and a good fun time. That would be what the kid would feel.
Well, because you were having a good time. That's what they say now about funerals, don't they? It's like, you guys, a celebration of life. You know, don't be sad. You know, just because Sheila got ran over by a train, let's celebrate her life. Like, still can't get over the whole train part. You know, Sheila getting dismembered under a train. It's kind of upsetting. But, I guess, like, there's a lot of business behind funerals now, too, right? Like, funeral homes and...
Oh, they're a big racket, though, as well. They're one of these horrible things. They're on this list of things that are kind of quite... I want to say scammy, you know?
Yeah. Like, how much did you love Sheila? Do you think you want to go with, like, the all-inclusive mahogany coffin? Or you just want, like, a cardboard box with packing tape around it? You know? How much did you love her, really? It's like, kind of mean, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Well, so we just go with the... we'll just write her name in a Sharpie on the cardboard box.
We did a whip round and... not a lot of people really donated, so yeah, I think we're gonna go for the cardboard box. We got our own packing tape though, so we don't need any of that.
Jesus, we got some old wrapping paper we can use.
It's pretty fucking grim, isn't it?
It is. So,
whoa.
I guess what I was sort of trying to say was that babies and children will sort of follow the mood of their parents.
That's right, yeah. They pick up on your mood.
So if something kind of... I think it's hard to sometimes hide your mood too. You know, if you're upset, it's going to be very hard to hide that. But at the same time, you can.
Yeah. With Prozac. Well, you can.
I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about. Fucking hell.
No, me neither.
Yeah, I mean, funerals are a racket. But also... yeah. Weddings are a big racket.
Oh, yeah, weddings are a bit of a
they
racket.
They are
too.
Incredible. It's a price sink where you're expected to do all these bizarre things the place to the amount of people you invite, from the dress to the DJ.
Yeah.
It is an absolute.
You went to one.
Nightmare.
Well, you've been to a couple recently, haven't you?
I've been
like
to a few weddings.
In the past, like, 2-3 years, you've been to a couple.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
Do you have any fun stories from those? Like, did you accidentally have sex with the bride or anything like that, you know? No.
I can't say, even if I had.
You don't kiss and tell.
How do you feel about weddings and marriage in a modern society?
Well, honestly, when it's your own, it's different because it's like, you know, you do it because you do it for yourself to make things official and stuff, but you do it because you've got family and stuff as well, right? It's a celebration and people want to like take part in that. But I think that a lot of the shit that happens at weddings and the things that are expected of people that they have to do and stuff like that nowadays, not only is it really fucking expensive and it's like a $1 billion industry, so there's a lot of like pressure, you know, like consumer pressure for you to partake in all this fucking bullshit. I don't agree with that side of it. I mean, I think if you're putting together a little sort of party for like your family and your loved ones to get together and celebrate something that's nice or whatever, that's pretty cool. But, you know, like if you're getting like a fucking Hummer limo with like neons on the bottom and your wife has been crying for 2 weeks about her wedding dress and all that kind of shit, it's like, well, I don't know. Maybe those parts of it aren't like the best.
I think,
although having said that, a Hummer limo is pretty fucking sweet.
A wedding and marriage are different things. I think that a wedding, expensive wedding, and by extension marriage, is a little bit like a New Year's resolution to go to the gym or paying for a gym membership. So, in order to be faithful so a lot of people might treat it as a thing where they say, okay, I'm gonna make this cost. I'm gonna make this payment. I'm gonna take this. I've sunk enough costs, you know, we're gonna go and we're gonna book a honeymoon, we're gonna pay for all this stuff, and then that's it. That's gonna cost me so much that I'm never gonna be unfaithful again. I'm kind of gonna, do you know what I mean? I think there's still a certain stigma attached to stuff. And you know, you'll the two of you will go somewhere with a kid and everyone will assume you're married. If you're not, then people will start thinking, oh, that's a bit weird. You know, it's still kind of, it's not a religious thing. You know, you didn't marry for any kind of religious reasons. Why did you get married, you know?
Oh, because we're both religious and it was like the next step. No, I'm just joking. Well, yeah, no, we got married. Well, I mean, partly, I think if we both grew up in the same country, we wouldn't have gotten married as young as we did. Sort of thing, because I mean, I lived in Canada and my wife lived over here.
Oh, yeah.
And really the next step, if we wanted to actually live together and not have to get visas and shit like that, you know, getting
married
was like
a green card. Sips, of course you did.
No, there's no green cards over here. Like I still have a Canadian passport. It's like a, you know, it's like dual citizenship sort of thing. So
yeah,
shit-ishin-ship.
I have trouble saying that as well.
Yeah, no, so do I. But it's not like you know, it's not the only reason you do it, but it is definitely, you know, if you're not from the same country, it's something that you sort of have to think about at some point. Especially, you know, if you don't want to have to like continually go back to your country of origin for stretches of time only to then just come back and stuff like that. Like it's kind of annoying. Like we had to do it for a while and it was like pretty annoying. So,
well,
I don't know.
I mean, I didn't realize that it was a visa thing after all. You know, I knew you were a big fan of the UK, and I knew you.
I love Visa. Yeah. I mean, I hate MasterCard, so I was thrilled. to get a visa.
But I don't know. It's difficult because I think marriage is classically this kind of religious thing, and
yeah,
much like a lot of things in our society, like Christmas, you know, I think a lot of the time the religious stuff has kind of been stripped out, but we like what they represent. And we like, we're happy, most people are happy to continue.
Did Jesus not want me to just get a ton of Nintendo games for Christmas? Was that not the
Jesus the loves you very much. You've been a very good
Jesus,
boy this year.
I decree every girl and boy across the land shall receive Nintendo games on this day. Oh. Delicately wrapped and placed under the fireplace by an imaginary man.
What do people get these days instead of Nintendo games?
Well,
I guess
they
just get
like
PlayStation games.
PlayStation 4 games.
Yeah.
They just get like Call of Duty and stuff like that, don't they?
That's sad.
That's sad. It's Monday. We had a weekend. I was in the club.
All weekend.
I was busting a move, like, pretty hard, like I usually do. And, yeah, then I just broke my femur and, well, the rest is history. There was no bass drop for me on this weekend because
breaking your femur is no mean feat, Sips. It's the biggest bone in the human body. Did you know that?
I know. I busted it hard, though.
It might not be. It's certainly... Yeah.
There's a bigger bone in my body than that, but...
It's the longest bone in the body and the strongest
and
bone
the girthiest
in the body.
As well.
I don't think it's the biggest technically, but it's the strongest and the longest and the girthiest.
It's really girthy.
It is tough to break your femur because my brother broke his and it was very, very bad. He broke it when he had a car crash. So it's pretty tough to break it. It's pretty bad when you break it as well because it's a pretty big old bone.
Like a backup. You know, like when you lose a kidney, you got a backup, right?
Yeah. Spare.
But, you know, there's definitely parts of your body where there's no backup. You know, once you've lost it, that's it. You're done.
There is another femur in your other leg, though.
Is there?
Yeah, you got two legs, Sips.
Oh, yeah, of course you do, yeah. What about people that have only one, though?
Which do you think the femur was? Do you think it was like the ass bone or something?
I never really thought about it, actually. My knowledge of a femur comes from roleplay games. Because you always find one, don't you?
There's the dinosaur.
Like, you know,
femur.
You always find one in a treasure chest. Like,
it's that classic bone that you see a caveman using as a club, right? It's got that knobbly bit on the end that goes into your hip.
Yeah.
And so they fashion it into a club. Well,
I mean, I never actually thought about it beyond that, though. That's the truth.
It's your it's the bit between your knee and it's connected to your hips. Yeah. It's big old bone. Big old boner.
Why isn't it in the song, though? You know, like...
Boner. I want to know where you think it was.
The knee bone's connected to the... This bone and that bone's connected to the... Femur. Like, it's not in the song, so...
It's just like a Simpsons version. No, but there probably is a song of that, like a realistic version of that song, the bone song.
Maybe.
What's that called?
Maybe.
What's the bone song called?
The bone song.
Dem Bones.
I think it actually is just... Is it Dem Bones? Roll Dem Bones. Dem Bones, Dem Bones, Dem Bones. I don't know. Is that... That's not a thing, though, is it? Dem Bones. It can't be. Say it ain't so.
Where does the Dem Bones start with? What does Dem Bones start the song with? Which bone?
I think it starts like it's like a musical start.
Does it start with
No, there's no lyrics to start with. It goes like No, wait a sec. That's not even That's not it. That's a different song altogether. Man, for some reason, I don't know why, but do you ever remember being scared of the Muppets when you were smaller? Do you think there's like a stage in your life that you get to that's a bit awkward where you're scared of the Muppets and you sort of have to overcome that fear before you can fully embrace and enjoy the Muppets?
I think, but when you don't know anything, you are... Suddenly, I think when you're very young, when I was very young, I was scared by strange stuff that maybe you'd think, well, why would kids be scared by that? But I think it's a little bit like that Uncanny Valley. You know what the Uncanny Valley is?
No, I don't know what that is. Is that something like Twilight? When I say is that something like Twilight, I mean it in the sense that Twilight is something I've heard about many times, but I've never actually seen before, and I have no intention of seeing either, because I know what it is, sort of thing. And I feel like maybe Uncanny Valley is a little bit like, fuck.
Wow. Okay, well, there's a lot to take in there, but basically, Uncanny Valley
take me on a trip.
Is this... It's basically a thing that theorizes... It's the reason why... we're scared of things that like zombies. Basically,
it's not a TV show.
Basically, we are encoded to have a revulsion when it comes to dead bodies, okay? Genetically. We are supposed to be...
I mean, I don't have that. Does that mean there's something wrong with me? Because actually, I get sexually aroused by them. Is that...
But that means probably that there's something wrong with you, yeah. But basically, there's kind of this graph, okay, of human likeness versus how much we like them. And it kind of... It slowly goes up towards... something that looks human-like, and then animals, and then like humans. So basically,
wait, there's a chart of which bodies you prefer to see dead. Is
no,
that what you're trying to tell me?
Things like your response to them, your your familiarity and attraction to them. So, for example,
right,
you can tell, even though like a corpse is very very close to a live human, you can tell the like our genetics make us have this automatic response towards them. It's kind of this weird thing, but basically it's the reason why sort of these non-human dolls sometimes can look extremely creepy. Because they're in this uncanny valley region where they're clearly not a human to us, but because they're just slightly different, we see them in the same sort of creepy vein.
I mean,
as like
when
a,
you said
a dead
uncanny
body.
Valley, I immediately thought, is that a computer game or like a TV? Like, it sounds like the name of a computer game.
Or it sounds like a crappy American TV show. Yeah.
It does, yeah. That's why I sort of mentioned Twilight, because, I mean, that's kind of a crappy American TV show too, isn't it? From what I know of it. Like,
what do you
said,
know
I've
about
seen it
Twilight? But what
it's,
do you know
it's
about
like
it?
It's like a teen vampire drama.
Yeah.
Like, it's like Dawson's Creek with vampires. It's like One Tree Hill with vampires instead
of
just
kind
normal 35-year-olds pretending to be 16-year-olds as they do in the American teen dramas.
I think the way I think of it, I think the
Dawson
audience...
was like 40 years old, right?
For fuck's sake. The audience overlapped with the audience for 50 Shades of Grey. Right on Twilight.
No, shut up.
I think it did.
I think 50 Shades of Grey was more like mine and your mum. That was the audience.
I think,
you know,
Twilight,
like,
is kind of like porn
older
for
women.
Girls.
Is it?
Yeah.
I like vampires. I like sexy vampires. I mean,
I
True Blood.
It's like
was
emotional
sexy.
Porn. It's kind of like. Oh. It's kind of. She is like this. Open empty shell character, the main character in Twilight,
right.
And
is
women
her name
are supposed
Twilight?
To put themselves no,
oh.
Women are supposed to put themselves in her shoes, but she's a funny one because she falls in love with both the most, you know, most attractive sparkly vampire, but also a really buff
the
werewolf.
Bad boy too,
yeah,
right.
And it's
so she's double dipping in the love department.
Yeah, that's kind of, I think, to some extent...
The appeal. Everybody secretly wants to double dip.
I guess so. Everyone wants her, you know? And
right.
It's...
I mean, do you think that... When you watched it, did you want her too?
It's not necessarily about her. Because she's an empty shell, right? But it's kind of like... I think of it as like one of these... Japanese dating video games, right, where you're just a sort of empty character and you can date the mysterious and aloof sparkly, you know, vampire,
yeah,
and you can also go and date someone else, and oh, but they're all troubled, and oh, they've got things, but
what
then
kind
you
of things though, like is it like
vampire,
oh damn my one. Abilities damn
curse
these vampire tendencies
popularity
that I have.
And radiant good looks. It's really difficult. Yeah, I don't know. Talking about Twilight, when neither of us really have read
it. No, I mean, it's one of these things that like I've never seen before, and it's like kind of old now too, isn't it? Like, is it like this...
Twilight? Yeah. Well, when the film came out in 2008 or whatever, I remember.
Yeah, 2008. That sounds about right.
The
That's old already.
I remember the loads of dads kind of accidentally being. tricked into going to it, saying, oh, it's a vampire movie. Then they thought it was going to be like Blade or something, you know, and all their daughters would take them to see Twilight.
I feel
and,
like I have to be careful about this stuff.
It was horrible.
Because
what?
I would go see Blade. Like, I saw Blade in the theaters and Blade 2, and I thought that was awesome. But, like, I wouldn't want to see a vampire romance in the theaters, especially with, like, my kids. That would be awkward as shit. Like, I need to be careful. I need to be careful about the kind of things that my kids are going to drag me to in the future, especially, like, my daughter, because, you know, I don't want to end up going to, like, Twilight 10, the movie or whatever, when she's old enough to go see that kind of stuff. Hopefully she's just not into that sort of stuff. You know, hopefully she's just into, I don't know, Ghostbusters and, you know, all the stuff my son's into pretty much. That'd be great.
Yeah. Well, there's, I mean, the thing is, like, you are with them a good proportion of the day, but you can't control, really, the other people they meet, especially at school, families, other friends, other people that affect their life. And all who, you know, I'm sure that you and me have the same, in that our lives were not influenced very much by our parents. It just happens that there's all sorts of influences on you, and some of them stick, some of them don't. Our brains are very elastic, and our desires and things change and are influenced based on the people we meet, and we meet a lot of people. So
true.
And also the books you read, the things you see, blah blah blah. The opposite, of course, is when you get something like there's a documentary called The Wolf Pack about this family of I think it's 7 kids who were basically confined in their apartment. They sort of they weren't allowed out, and they were homeschooled in there. And
that shit is crazy.
They learned about the world basically through watching movies. And so they're just kind of a bit mad. They were a bit mad.
I mean, I've learned a lot of the world by playing video games. So, like, you know, and I'm fine. There's nothing wrong with me. So I think, you know, more power to them. more poor to them.
So there was this thing which I thought was really interesting. Do you remember the Bone Wars? Did you ever hear about the Bone Wars?
Bone Wars?
It's a thing I heard about on the old QIL podcast, which
fan of all that stuff, yeah.
But
why do you listen to that stuff?
Apparently, like, it's just as bad as we are. Like, they're completely wrong. Turns out every episode is just a lot of the stuff they say is
every
bollocks.
Every episode is just nonsense.
But
yeah,
so the Bone Wars was really interesting because there were these two guys, Edward Drinker Cope, okay, of the Academy of Natural Sciences in Philadelphia, and Othniel Charles Marsh of the Peabody Museum of Natural History at Yale. I love the word Peabody.
Sorry,
actually.
This guy's last name is Drinker Coke?
Drinker Cope, yeah. Drinker Cope, not Coke.
Oh, sorry. Edward, I thought you said Drinker Coke. I was like, I called
snuck
bullshit.
In
I thought you were going to tell some sort
there,
of
some
stupid
low level
dad joke or something.
No.
Yeah.
So we'll call him Eddie. Eddie Drinker Coke and
Eddie Drinker
Charlie
Coke,
Marsh.
Yeah.
Of course, his first name is Othniel. I can't believe that his first name is that. Anyway, they were both searching for fossils, okay, in Nebraska, Colorado, Wyoming, in all these rich bone beds, okay? Bone beds. That sounds like a good thing. And each of them used underhanded methods to try to outcompete each other in the field, okay? So they were bribing, thieving, destroying each other's bones,
doing
attacking
cocaine.
The others. I don't know. Maybe they were like grinding
really
up dinosaur
actually.
Bones and sniffing them. Yeah, who knows
what
they were doing.
That sounds crazy.
Why
would
they
do that?
They were basically, they hated each other. They were these bitter rivals, okay?
Right.
And they raced to publish new dinosaurs, okay? But they were all kind of Frankenstein's monsters, you know, because they didn't really know what they were doing. And a lot of them were fake. So what they would do is they would just get any old bones out of the ground that were jumbled together and shove them all back together to try and build, like, you know, it would be like it would be like Lego, you know. And so
I feel like at the best of times that's what you know, dinosaur bones are, because how do they know? Like, it's crazy. How do they know where the bits go? Like, if I found a bunch of bones in the ground, I would never be able to piece them together. I mean, bearing in mind, I'm not actually trained in this field whatsoever, but still.
Clearly, you're not trained. The fact is that if you look, for example, if you Google gorilla skeleton versus human skeleton, you'll see there's like an enormous amount of similarity there. You know, almost, you know, 99% of our genetic structure is shared, or more, like 99.7. So,
right.
You know, the fact is that we are very, very, very similar to the great apes, and it's reflected in the skeleton. If you look at sometimes these skeletons, it's sometimes hard to even tell the difference, but certainly in certain parts. So what you have is an idea of what bones do what based on their size. So the femur is obviously a weight-bearing
it's
bone.
Always back to the femur. The femur. I think we need to pronounce it properly too, because like if you just say femur, it doesn't do it a lot of justice. I think we have to call it the femur.
This very
I think
demure,
that sounds better.
But
yeah,
surely that has
better.
To have an E on the end. Never mind. We're not going to get into grammatical discussions about this stuff too. We've got enough
to
talk
about.
Do QI
elves ever cover like grammaticals and stuff, or not really?
I'd like to. Really, I don't sort of think thing. It's one of their main things, but certainly if it's interesting, then I think they probably have. I'm sure Stephen Fry loves it, so anything grammatical they can get in there, probably he just has a hard-on instantly for.
Nice.
I do like Stephen Fry, though. So actually, he's left QI now. It's now Sandy Toksvig going to be presenting it from now on.
And Gary Drinkercoke, or whatever his name is.
Gary Drinkercoke.
He's
busy doing the Bone dinosaur, Wars.
Dinosaur boy.
He's boning it up. So
it's
yeah.
Just like polishing bones. Having
a lot
coke.
Of the... They published 142 new dinosaurs or something combined, but like almost all of them, only 32 of them are actually valid, because the rest of them were just made up. You know, they'd put like three dinosaurs worth of bones together and make this horrific monster, chuck away all the extra skulls they got left over, you know. And
and this is because they were so busy trying to have like a competition rather than actually taking science seriously.
And I think
that's a lesson to everybody. If you're in the field of science, don't have a competition. Stay true to the ideals of science.
Well, I think one of the ones which was very much... Sorry, girl, I was ignoring you because I was just trying to find this out. What did you just say?
I wasn't even paying attention to what I was saying.
Stay true to the ideals of... What are you saying?
A velociraptor.
Anymore. That is definitely real, yes. You can have that one.
A Tyrannosaurus Rex.
That is a real dinosaur, yes. They were
Ankylosaurus.
Ankylosaurus. I mean, that's the one with the...
With the big ball at the end of his tail.
Yeah, I think that
ball
one
tail.
Is real. Yeah,
okay.
That one.
What about a Stegosaurus?
Sure, that's definitely real. That's got those big plates. Okay, you're getting
what
the good ones.
What about a Brontosaurus?
Now, that one is not real. That is one of the bullshit ones. Now, that is one which was found by Charles Marsh and was initially bollocks. It was too big, it didn't make sense, he'd done it wrong. But I think that very recently they came back and did a version of it which was probably all right.
Revision of the Brontosaurus.
It got kind of version 2 of it or whatever, it got revised, but apparently it wasn't. Because when I read about this first, like a few years back, it was all this big controversy. But now I think they've settled on it actually being not as bad as
what originally about
thought.
A pterodactyl?
I think that's a real one again. I think the pterodactyl is a good example of one of the dinosaurs which survived the apocalypse, kind of, or didn't necessarily survive, but basically modern. Birds.
It flew into space. Oh man, that's how it avoided all of the catastrophe that was happening on the planet. It just flew into space, just chilled up there for a bit. It's like, yeah, no problem. Came back down when everything was fine, and to this day, of course, you can hear the terrifying screech of the pterodactyl in our skies. Just go outside. There you'll hear it.
Sorry. The ocean is very, very big and, yes, very unexplored, but the areas of the ocean that are unexplored are very, very deep, and therefore they're very, very dark. No light can get down to these areas of the ocean, which limits the amount of life that can be
there. You need a submersible. But what's the deepest, like, a human-made submersible can go? Because there's a lot of pressure, obviously, the deeper you go. And I think that the deepest that you can go is, like, 20 feet or something before shit starts to really hit the fan.
Well, I think you have to ask James Cameron about that, you know.
Yeah, he knows.
He loves to go.
Because he, of course, discovered the wreck of the Titanic.
That's right.
And that was... Well, the Titanic, like, the wreck of the Titanic's pretty deep, though, right? Like, they even had some trouble getting to that.
Again, I don't think he discovered it. I think he went and looked around it.
Did he?
Because he liked,
I don't know if he even did that. You know,
he made a movie, didn't he?
No, he fucking didn't. James Cameron
famously was like a submarine explorer, deep sea explorer.
Up.
He was.
He wishes. He fucking wishes.
He fucking was it. So I wasn't even joking.
You're joking, right?
I'm not joking.
It's a funny joke anyway, because I mean, James Cameron. This is the same guy that made Angel, the TV series Angel, right?
Yeah.
No way that he's been in a submarine before, okay?
He fucking went to, like, the bottom of the Atlantic or something. He had some dumbass fucking project that he had, and
no,
he was in
it. Okay, I think we can agree that he has worked on a couple of dumbass projects before, but he's not been to the bottom of the sea. There's no fucking way.
Hang on. Deep sea dives. Okay. On March the 7th, 2012.
Shut
Challenger up. Cameron took the Deep Sea Challenger to the bottom of the New Britain Trench in a 5-mile deep solo dive. He went five
Fuck
miles
me.
Down.
I take it all back.
That's how fucking deep it is. So he spent more than 3 hours exploring the ocean floor before returning to the surface. He's the first person to accomplish a trip solo. There were unmanned dives, blah, blah, blah. He made a 3D film during his trip. He collected new.
Oh, yeah.
He discovered a new species of sea cucumber, squid worm, giant single-celled amoeba, which are exciting finds due to the harshness of the environment. So there you go. So basically, it's so deep down there that there's only two ways to survive. Obviously, first thing, it's very, very high pressure. You know,
Way number one, be James Cameron. And way number two, discover a new breed of sea cucumber.
No, if you were that deep in the ocean, okay, there's only two ways to survive. One is to have energy sources dropping down from above. So, like, things die or like a God fish rays. Is eating some food, but it drops it and it sinks. So some scavengers can survive in the dark by eating the detritus that has dropped down into the dark, okay? The other way to survive in the dark at the bottom of there is with some sort of either artificial light source or artificial energy source in some way. So, for example, there are some hydrothermal vents in the sea, a little bit like hot springs on land, pumping out heat and usually things like sulfur. And some sulfur-based life forms have been found. I think they're called extremophiles. So these kind of things that could live in extreme conditions. So it's unlikely.
So do you think Cameron found one of these things and that's how he was successful? He found a vent and he just, like, you know, hovered above it or whatever. And it's like, hey, fuck you, nature. I've done it.
No,
Cameron
think...
wins.
For a start, I think he's a vegan, right? And second, he obviously did it after Titanic, so he wouldn't have been able to do this ridiculous thing without, like, the money that he made from
Titanic,
this stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, right, he's an expert on deep sea exploration stuff. Because he did The Abyss, remember? That was his original.
That's ruined my
success.
Whole day. He's had some really good movies, actually, it's true. That's ruined my whole day, though, because I wanted him to just be good at making a couple of movies and not do other things. Like, I had him pigeonholed big time as just like, Cameron, stay in your box, all right? Just stick to the movies, stick to what you're good at, all right? We don't want any more deep sea diving or fucking spacewalks or whatever is next for you. Just can it, okay?
He made a film in 1981 called Piranha 2, The Spawning. Can you believe it? And then they were like, this is so good, we're going to have you direct Terminator 2 Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
I'll tell you what, because he also directed Aliens, which was the second Alien movie, which was arguably the best in the trilogy. So Cameron has this ability to come in mid-trilogy and make a good movie. How does he do it?
He's a unique man. He did direct Terminator, by the way. Did he do the first one too? Yeah, he did.
Oh, I thought he just came in out of nowhere. He wrote it like, as well. Who's this fucking little Jimmy here? Little Jimmy Cameron out of nowhere. With this fucking blockbuster movie. Guns N' Roses on the soundtrack.
Who are you doing an impression of there?
I sound like some movie guy, I guess. I don't know.
It's like a stock movie guy.
I'm in charge of movies here
at Movie Corp.
Anyway, I got a bombshell to drop on you. What about Team Destiny's Dialed instead of Child? We can make a theme song around that, actually. Remember that Destiny's Child song? We'd have to be Destiny's Dialed, though, because it's the only way for the DD to fit.
Destiny's Dialed? Like, you mean like dialing the phone?
Sure.
People don't really dial anymore.
It could be like a tribute band to Destiny's Child, but check it out, okay? You know, remember that song? I think it's the Charlie's Angels song. It's like, the watch that I'm wearing, I bought it. But like, we can customize all that to like our own story. So like, for instance, this garage I'm sitting in, I bought it. I'm playing, I bought them. Do you got any others? This pizza I'm eating, I bought it. You know, it's just like, you know, you want to make sure that everybody knows that.
This tea that I'm drinking, I made it. I guess I did.
You could actually mix it up. Yeah. This tea I'm brewing, I made it. This garage I'm sitting in, I bought it.
I cleaned it.
No, it's not very clean, though. This is the thing. It's fucking comfy, though, man.
How is it? A mess already?
The ultimate man cave. Actually, I did clean it up a little bit, but then it got messy again. It's just the way that it goes. Like, I need somebody to come in and clean it on the regular, but I don't really have anyone that can do it. So, you know, that may be something to think about for the future, you know? It's a little little job opening.
Excited.
Yeah, maybe it's something you'd like to do. Bring your bubble over, hook up with some hot single mums, and clean my garage.
Okay.
On the regular.
I'll bring the rubber
shampoo.
Gloves.
Shampoo. The floor shampoo.
Yeah, shampoo. So we talked a little bit about all sorts of stuff recently. Don't tell me
he's
dead.
Do you remember the movie Gremlins?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I do. I watched it at Christmas, like when I was a kid. I think that scared me.
And do you know who directed that movie?
It was Joe Dante.
No, you're going to be fucking surprised at who actually directed the movie Gremlins, because I didn't realize. I watched it yesterday.
It's Joe Dante.
It's not Joe Dante. Close, though. It is none other than Stefan Spielbergo, the one and only Gremlins, motherfucker. Can you believe it?
Not according to Wikipedia.
Yeah, what does Wikipedia know? All right, I saw with my own eyes. Steven Spielberg presents Gremlins.
Oh, he presents it. That's like saying, that's like having the fucking a ghost written. It's like saying, Jordan's autobiography.
I know. You know, you say this, you say all this. But we both know that Steven Spielberg isn't just going to sit idly by and present something without getting into that director's chair
without
and
getting
doing
a good
the magic.
Wad of cash.
Without
He's not
doing
just
a good amount
by.
Of direction. He's going to get in there. He's going to be like, listen, Joe DiMaggio, I know that this is your film, but I'm Steven Spielberg, world-renowned director, and I think that I have a thing or two that I could offer to the production of this movie. Why don't you just step aside a minute, let me sit down, and let me do this for a second. And, the guy was just like, oh, well, Steven, I think the thing is Gremlins is, of course, a period piece that I really want to make sure we really embrace the values of the Gremlin Society. And Steven's like, Joe, shut the fuck up a minute, okay? Let me sit down in this director's chair. And that's when the magic happened. I don't know exactly what it is that happened, because like a professional chef, Steven Spielberg does that thing with his hand where he hides from your vision what he's actually doing.
Okay.
Because it's secret. It's like a trick of the trade.
It's drugs.
And then he pulled it out of the bag or his ass. And there's the story of Gremlins.
Well, do you know what?
So popular, so big, because Steven Spielberg knows how to direct a movie, and Joe Piscopone, or whatever his name was, the guy you mentioned that you thought did it,
right,
doesn't.
Well,
and Steven recognized that early on, and that's what made it such a big hit.
Okay.
Just got rid of the other guy.
Here's the deal. The story wasn't originally intended to be filmed at all until Spielberg took an interest in turning it into a film. He bought it.
See?
And then hired... Yeah. Joe Dante as the director because of his previous experience with horror comedy. Okay. Spielberg has a cameo in the film as a man riding a recumbent bicycle. That's one of those bicycles that has like the lean.
I don't remember seeing him in it, actually.
Okay. Blah, blah, blah. Apparently, instead of Stripe being a Mogwai who becomes a gremlin, there was originally no Mogwai named Stripe. Rather, Gizmo was supposed to turn into Stripe the gremlin. However, Spielberg wanted to keep Gizmo cute and want him
present throughout
the film.
Remember how awful it was when they would go in the water? Remember when they went in the swimming pool and they started turning into the bad ones? And it was like, oh my god.
That was amazing, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't. It was... petrifying.
Did you watch it with your kid?
No.
Oh, okay.
He was in and out of the room sort of thing, but not fully watching it, and then we stopped watching it like when it started to get really intense because, you know, I don't want him to get scared.
it was a horror comedy, definitely. It was definitely a spookier film, I remember, as a kid.
It was one of the spookiest, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
Yeah. But I remember, you know, we were watching it, and it was like, fucking Spielberg, I can't believe it. What has this guy not done? Show me a movie that Spielberg hasn't had a hand in. Like, this guy, seriously, his contribution to film over the past, like, 100 years has been crazy.
Just go easy, Sips.
What?
Go easy. I know you're a fan.
Well.
Oh my God. Might as well.
I just want to show my respect to, you know, arguably the biggest talent in the biz. Do you want to know something else about Spielberg?
$4 billion.
I'm not surprised. You know why?
Why?
Listen, this is crazy, okay? George Lucas, when he was making Star Wars in the first place, they were doing they were putting it together, and it was scheduled for release. And at the same time, Spielberg was working on Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yeah.
So Lucas and Spielberg are like pretty good friends, and you know, they'd happen by each other's sets.
I'm already taking this story with a pinch of salt as if it's
You can look it up. As if it's, you look it up on Wikipedia or whatever.
An old Sipsy classic. Anyway. I'm just making it up off the top of my head.
No,
I'm just going to assume
it is. This is 100% true, okay?
Okay.
So Star Wars is just like wrapping up, and they've shown it to like the executives at 20th Century Fox or whatever, and you know, they showed them the version where they didn't have the special effects in, so they had like... you know, a shopping cart for the Millennium Falcon and stuff, and all this like old World War II plane footage, for the dogfighting scenes and stuff.
Right.
And Spielberg is at this, and everybody was like, George, I don't know, like, are you on crack or something? This looks pretty bad. You know, what have we paid for here? Star Wars is going to be pretty dumb. And
Mr.
Spielberg
Pepsi
comes
Cola
up to him.
Was like,
yeah,
I
yeah,
don't
Mr.
Know
Pepsi
about this,
Golan,
George.
Gary Coke drinker, were like, George, you're fucking crazy, man. And anyway, Spielberg says to George Lucas, like, fuck, this is going to be huge, by the way. George Lucas is like, nah, I don't think so. And, you know, they're at the set of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and George Lucas is like, no, I think this is going to, like, kill Star Wars at the box office. And Steven Spielberg's like, no way, George. Like, this is going to be humongous, trust me. So he's like, all right, well, fine. You know, I'm about to release this movie. It's going to flop. I'm probably going to lose everything because I've poured like all of my heart and soul and finances into it. He's like, why don't you give me like 2% of Close Encounters of the Third Kind so that I have some sort of insurance, you know, after it all goes wrong or whatever. And in return, I'll give you 2% of Star Wars because I know that it's just going to be like terrible or whatever. So... Steven Spielberg's like, yeah, okay, fine. That sounds like a good deal to me. And so George Lucas is like, okay, great. Well, at least, you know, I know that Steven Spielberg's movie is going to be amazing and stuff's going to do really well. So at least I'll have some money after, like, this all goes fucking down the crapper. So Star Wars releases. George Lucas is on vacation in Hawaii with his wife at the time. Totally forgot that it was even being released that night because he was so disappointed and thought it was just going to be a train wreck or whatever. And then they start watching the news and everybody's like losing their shit about Star Wars and stuff and going crazy. And it's become this big phenomenon and everything. And it was actually released to like 35 theaters originally, but they had to re-release it later on because it was so popular. So they re-released it again and it made millions and stuff. And to this day, Steven Spielberg still owns 2% of Star Wars.
I don't believe it.
I fucking tell you, it's true.
Oh my God.
It might be more than 2% even. I seem to remember 2%, but it could be more. So there you go.
Let's fucking see.
Spielberg actually has, he owns some of Star Wars. And Disney's acquisition of Star Wars only covered digital distribution as well. So like of some of the other movies or whatever. So like still like physical sales of Star Wars and stuff. I think Lucas or Spielberg or a couple of other people may still profit from.
Oh my God, you're right. 2.5%. Yeah. They each trade on it.
Yeah,
but Close Encounters made like $300 million at the box office.
I know that was his insurance, well. Right? But then he just like he doubled up because I think
they both did incredibly well though
off
they
the back of those movies. So, yeah, so and then well. They went on to do Indiana Jones together. Remember? They were like, "Holy shit, George, Steven, I love you, man. I love you, too. We made so much money. What do you want to do next? Fucking let's get Harrison Ford in again. And this time, let's give him a whip and see what happens."
I think he's the true genius behind these things. So I watched an episode of Star Trek. Okay. I watched an episode of Star Trek.
What, The Next Generation?
Yeah. It was a really early episode. And it was an episode where Wesley got Q was involved, and he basically gave everyone on the Enterprise everything they ever wanted. Okay, so he gave Worf like a really aggressive Klingon woman. He made he made Data a human. You know, he equivalent or whatever, and he because that's always what Data's like the Pinocchio of Star Trek. And I want to be a real boy.
God. I want to feel. And Tasha Yar, touch me. I want to feel what it is to be a man.
And they in the show, they had this moment where Wesley Crusher grew up, okay? And they obviously cast this actor who was like a Hollywood bodybuilder model guy. He was like 6'5". He was absolutely gorgeous, you know? And then obviously we know what he turned into because he's Will Wheaton, you know, this... who I'm not the biggest fan of, but... He's not. He's kind of. Do you know what I mean? He's not like a bodybuilder. He's not like what Star Trek envisioned him to be.
I mean, it's got to be said, Lewis, neither are you. So I don't know. I mean, or are you? Are you one?
What do you mean? I'm not going to grow up into like Arnold Schwarzenegger, am I? I'm just saying. So basically, there's this thing in Hollywood, though, where they tend to like cast someone who looks a bit similar to that person. You could sort of imagine like that they're a younger actor or an older version of them. Sometimes they get it really off, right? And you just can't.
I mean, they do that in porn as well with stunt cocks. They try to find somebody with a penis that resembles yours so that you can have a bit of downtime in between all that fucking.
What are you talking about?
It's like I thought we were talking about like stunt doubles, and then I started talking about stunt cocks.
What are stunt cocks, though? I didn't think they were. It's like what you just said.
Cock, yeah. But like, because you've been at it all day, hammering away. You need a little break. So they get somebody with a very similar penis to your own in.
Oh.
And then they do the close up shots of your dick. But it's not your dick. Somebody else's dick. That looks
like
your
dick. So you could
have
the same thing for women, though, like stunt boobs. Because I think in Game of
Kinda,
Thrones.
But.
You know, in the Game of Thrones, where there's that, where she has to walk naked through the whole of King's Landing.
Oh, yeah. Don't spoil it. I mean, that's a pretty big spoiler.
Is a big spoiler, but...
it's the new season's coming out, like, pretty soon, so...
Tough
is it,
shit, you know
does
what?
Does it matter?
Tough shit, right? If you're that far behind in Game of Thrones, fuck you.
on the topic of not just Crusher, but a crush, and I mean, it's a pretty typical thing to talk about, isn't it? Because I think every guy who watched Star Trek The Next Generation had a crush on Deanna Troi. But whilst I did appreciate Deanna Troi's boobs.
Ample boobs.
I also had a bit of a crush on Beverly Picard. Crusher as well.
Oh, did you?
I don't know why. Yeah, it was really weird. It was like an awkward one.
No,
where it was like, you know what? I would let her give me medical attention, and I'd be pretty happy with that too. I don't know what it was.
I don't think I ever had a crush on old Dr. Crusher. No, definitely not. No. She's too much of a mom.
Picard did.
Picard did, but he was like a granddad.
Some people like that. People like that, the mom thing, don't they?
Well, that's when not you're to a say granddad, that they actually do.
Yeah. I think Picard needed, he could have had Deanna Troi as well. It's got to be said. You know, there was there were times when I'm sure that Picard could have just turned around and been like, Deanna, suck me off. She would
my
just
quarters,
like,
10 minutes.
My quarters, yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. I just think that, like, I think that Deanna Troi gets, like, all the attention when I think Beverly Crusher was, like,
engage.
You know.
Yeah. Engage, blowjob.
She's engage.
One blowjob, engage.
Beverly, you're going to have to do that warp 9. I have other things to do today, please.
Thank you. Okay. Jesus.
Oh, shit. So anyway, but yeah, I think people should actually consider Beverly Crusher as a alternative to Deanna Troi, you know? I mean, as a source, Deanna Troi can only be used so many times before you think, I need something new. I need something fresh. I need something exciting. And that excitement is Beverly Crusher doing the doctor bit on my balls.
Yeah. So, Jesus Christ.
What?
Jesus, so sorry, now I just zoned out for a second there.
You were thinking about Beverly, weren't you?
I
thinking about old Bev.
I think as a 12-year-old watching Star Trek,
getting her medical apparatus out, yeah?
You couldn't have ever envisioned that was just a crush, right? It couldn't have ever been like a relationship. It just wouldn't have worked, you know?
No, I wasn't interested in having a relationship with Beverly Crusher at the time. Okay?
What?
I was becoming a man at the time. I was going through puberty. There's a lot of confusing thoughts going through my mind. But one thing I did know for sure was that, you know what? Beverly Crusher is a contender alongside Deanna Troi.
Okay.
And also the other one that Data used to be in love with.
It was Dana Scully. Okay.
Dana Scully. Nice. She's back. Isn't there like a new X-Files? I saw people talking about this on Twitter, I think.
It's
like a new X-Files.
Is it out
it's got
yet?
The same. I don't know.
It might be out then. I don't know. But
I'll
probably watch it in like three years' time or whatever.
I used to watch X-Files a lot, actually. It was fucking good.
So who else did you have a crush on from TV?
Princess Leia in the metal bikini, which is everybody. Everybody who grew up around that time when those movies were coming out.
There's only like 5 minutes of that in all history.
That was enough, okay? We didn't have anything else back then. Jeez.
That was all you had.
Who else? I'm trying to think. Who else was like... I mean, Star Trek. I used to watch Star Trek. I used to watch a lot of cartoons. And like, I don't know. They didn't really make like... Not like nowadays where like nerds obsess over like cartoon girls and stuff. You didn't really have that so much. Like, I don't remember any of that anyway. It's like newer cartoons, I guess they make like, you know, people
I just
in
don't
the
know
cartoons.
Who you're
they try
possibly...
to make them kind of sexy or whatever, but like that's never really worked for me. I've always been more like, you know, Deanna Troi. Not so much Dana Scully, I gotta say.
I mean, your obsession with Deanna Troi is bordering on the worrying, I must admit.
Well, you say that. I mean, I think that there's somebody else you should be a little bit more worried about when it comes to obsessions with Deanna Troi, and his name is Geordi LaForge, and I'm pretty sure he actually attempted to sexually assault her in the holodeck at one point. I've mentioned this a couple of times. It was a really creepy episode of The Next Generation. where he was like, he was just perving hard. Deanna Troi actually walked into the holodeck while he was in there one time and saw herself. And she's like, Jordy, what are you doing? And he's like, Deanna, no! I don't want you to see me like this! He had his visor off and everything. Fuck, it was crazy.
I can't remember watching that specific one. There are some ridiculous episodes, but there was an episode where Jordy had a problem with the engine, so he created a hologram of the chief engine design engineer, right, who was this really hot woman.
Right.
Okay, yeah. And he got all like
one.
He got
that's
all steamy with her.
Yeah, where he was perving on her.
That's right.
That's the one. Oh, I'm confused. It wasn't Deanna Troi.
A season later, she actually visits the ship for real.
She visits the ship. She said, Jordy, I've got a 6-month-old baby now. Jordy's like, that's not my baby.
No, but obviously she doesn't know anything about this, okay? And she's like totally the opposite of the hologram. She's like totally like off of him and hates him and stuff. Anyway, she discovers that he's got this hologram program about her. And it is really sinister, actually. It is almost
sinister.
Like,
I remember feeling really uncomfortable watching that
like
whole
someone,
episode.
It's like you saw this girl, like just a picture of her, and then you built this entire sort of sketchbook and this entire 3D model.
I know, it's almost
like
the next generation. The next generation predicted Reddit like before it actually happened.
Exactly. It really did. And it was like he was totally perving on her Facebook and stuff, getting all of her info and all of her deets.
Yeah.
And implementing it into his real
doing
doll
some
fantasy,
sleuthing.
Basically.
Yeah.
And then she comes along and she walks in on it, right? And she's like,
and she's
oh my
like
God,
mortified.
I'm horrified. And it turns out she's married. Oh, it's the worst. It's the worst. Poor Geordi. Yeah, he had a bad one. But they became friends at the end. For some reason.
I don't remember that.
He managed to logic her out of it, which I don't think would ever, 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 ever happen.
You know what it was?
He would
you know
have
what he
been
did? He guilted
fired.
Her. He guilted what? Her. He was like, I can't see. Love me. And then she was like, oh, Jordy, you know, I've got a thing for blind guys, blind engineers who have to wear hairbands on their face to see. Bye.
All right.